Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hello and welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by WinBet. I am Andrew Laird, and joining me shortly will be Scott Genstead as we discuss some common mistakes people should avoid in their daily fantasy football journey. Similar to previous Friday episodes of this podcast, this is previously recorded discussion, so while some of the player team examples could be a little out of date, I promise the concepts are still very much applicable. And with that, let's get into it.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, the Friday DFS edition. I am Scott Genta, joined today, as usual, by Andrew Laird. If you could please rate or review the podcast, we greatly appreciate that if you enjoy listening to us, hopefully all season long as we break down DFS slates every Friday morning. That would be fantastic if you leave some a bunch of stars, a nice comment. We would greatly appreciate that. Andrew, it's almost season time. This is the last podcast. We're going to kind of wrap some stuff up, do some talk about avoiding mistakes, making some goals for the season. But next week, week one, how are you?
I'm good. It seems like I've already been a part of so many like week one conversations. And because the prices have been out for a while and everybody's like getting very fired up. And I kind of want to be like, I don't want to look yet because there's, you know, we still have another week and not that like a ton of things change. But it's also weird because people just like agonize over so many things this early. And it's like, don't get used to having this much time because you know, week two through 17 in the playoffs, like you'll get a few days, but now we're getting like weeks and it's just like, it's almost too much time. Like people are, we're overthinking so much. And by the time you finally make your lineup, like you could be back to where you were 3 weeks ago, but all that time of like pouring it over, like maybe that wasn't actually helpful.
Yeah, I'm one who tends to not overplan. If anything, I procrastinate to a poor degree. But I've got some season long drafts going. I know you're not a big season long guy, but I've got a couple NFFC drafts going. I had one last night, and I'm going up to the Stanford football game this weekend. So I've done a good job of planning myself away from overthinking DFS week one. But I'm ready for it to start. I'm looking forward to next week. I'm looking forward to breaking down the slate. I think it's going to be a fun time. And it's funny you talk about not much changing, except for the fact that we have two top 10 running backs that are still holding out.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of where everybody's going to go to early on, exactly. I think. It's one of those that like, oh, if you play these guys, then everything kind of opens up. And you know, even we're kind of late enough where even if these guys somehow sign a contract in the next few days, like you can't imagine that they're actually going to play in week one or have like a full workload. That actually just muddies the waters more if they come back. So
it does.
You know, you can, at this point, you just hope that they don't. So, but it, again, it's like one of these things where I feel like during the regular season, you kind of look at a few ideas, at least from like a cash perspective. My player pool gets pretty small. And because I've had so much time to look, and I have done a very poor job of not looking, it's like, oh my gosh, I could make like 50 cash lineups because we have these situations where the like pricing hasn't caught up because they release it so early. So week one should be interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. We talk about the benefits of DFS, but I tell you what, you know, the Melvin Gordon, Zeke Elliott, Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, Justin Jackson decisions in season long are just agonizing. Like trying to figure out where to slot those guys is so miserable. But in DFS, it's so nice. Like we just figure out by next Thursday, next Friday, what it looks like, and we figure it out from there. It's just it's a nice advantage. It's a negative in season long right now, just dealing with these holdouts. Last year, Le'Veon Bell like literally ruined seasons and a team. So, you know, if you want to talk about the benefits of DFS, avoiding these holdout situations, having to deal with them, it's been not fun in season long, even thinking about them.
If I didn't have enough reasons to not play season long fantasy football already.
I just talked you from zero to negative two teams.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, I get it. And it's funny because, you know, there are enough people that I follow on Twitter who play season long fantasy football and are doing, you know, NFFC drafts and all these other, you know, a bunch of best balls. And people are like, oh, I started with like Zeke and Gordon. And now they're like, they're all in on having these guys play. And like, they, obviously the reward can be massive because they're, you know, they're falling in these drafts, but man, that's like dealing with injuries is bad enough. And now you're like, is this guy ever going to get paid? And if not, he's not going to play. And so,
yeah, I mean,
it sounds fun, man. Sounds really fun.
I tell you what, you talk about Zeke dropping. He went fourth in my NFFC online draft last night. So yeah, he actually didn't. Gordon definitely is, but I think people are reading into Zeke's situation more than Gordon, and he's still going top four. It's pretty wild. That's a big investment to make in a guy who, you know, hasn't seen a day of practice yet, and we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I love the whole like, well, he's staying in football shape, and it's like they're working out and like practicing with your team is very different. That's why they make guys practice with the team.
I always love the he's on a flight from Cabo to Dallas, where, you know, he might be just like seeing someone or hanging out or doing some business. Like, it just the fact that we're following, you know, where what country Zeke is in right now is just so absurd. So I'm looking forward to the season starting, getting rid of some of this BS, and then getting in some real games.
Yeah, if you think the BS is ending just because the regular season starts, you're in for a rude awakening, Scott.
Yeah, that's very true. But Speaking of, before we get into making goals, RotoWire, we've got, do you know RotoWire has a college football podcast? That's right. Host Nick Whalen and John McKechnie will be posting episodes every Wednesday throughout the season with a focus on fantasy and betting. Just search for RotoWire College Football anywhere you happen to listen to podcasts. A great time to do so right now. This is week one of college football. There are a number of games tonight. Everybody plays on Saturday. It's a big weekend for college football. There's a lot of big games. I'm heading up to the Stanford Northwestern game myself. So if you are a college football fan, if you bet on college football, you play DFS, which is now back on DraftKings and FanDuel, or if you play season long, a great podcast to listen to.
Yeah, totally agree. And I did know that podcast was around.
I think it's a rhetorical question, Andrew.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, just you know, if as we go forward, I don't think you need to answer that one. So let's talk about we're going into the season. I think, you know, this weekend is a good time as if you're playing DFS, kind of make some goals, figure out what you want from this DFS season. We've talked about you know, everything in the DFS world over the last 6 weeks, if we've done these podcasts, but, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what percentage of cash games versus GBP, what's your goal coming into the season, you know, and it's not like I want to make $800, you know, not an exact number goal or an ROI goal, but, you know, what are your goals? What are you trying to do with the season? How do you address that kind of going into week one?
I just want to survive. No, I'm only partially kidding there, but I mean, I generally, like we've talked about previously, like I mostly stick to cash games in football. And my expectation is I will be predominantly playing cash again this year. It's more trying to figure out how big the gap is between what I'm building for cash lineups and what I'm building for GPPs, and kind of I would like to see my GPP entries grow as the season goes on. Or it's just one of these things that, like, I just don't, not that I have like NFL cash games like figured out. It's not that easy, but I'm a lot more comfortable in cash games. And so I think moving on to GPPs just makes more sense, because, you know, it's just kind of another step in DFS football. Although I say that, and I think I'm actually more looking forward to trying to figure out showdown GPPs as opposed to the classic GPPs, because just the way that you need to analyze one game and how to make a unique lineup and figuring out which correlations make the most sense for that one specific game, I think is a challenge that's a little greater than, I mean, obviously winning $1 million for the, for a classic Sunday is a big challenge, but I don't know.
There's a $1 million showdown winner week one.
Yeah. For the first showdown. Yeah. The Thursday night game.
That is crazy.
Why are the Packers and Bears starting the season?
I think it's the 100th anniversary, kind of they're the classic two teams thing. Okay. I think that's what, because usually it's a Super Bowl winner.
You're right, exactly, exactly.
And the Packers and Bears didn't win the Super Bowl as far as I remember.
They did not.
I think it's a 100th anniversary, kind of, you know, going back with the NFC North and, you know, kind of the old George Halas, Vince Lombardi stuff. I think they were going with that. With
I suppose that, makes sense. Guess. Yeah, I mean, long-standing sports leagues, not that like 100 years is an eternity, but that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Before we continue, a quick message from one of our sponsors. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decisions. Listen up, folks, I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's W-Y-N-N-B-E-T. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts.
So setting goals is actually a big one for me. I think you're probably a little more disciplined than me, probably not something that you need to fear as much as I do. But I'd like to keep my GPP and cash percentages a little more standard during the year. As I go in the year, I tend to, I admit that I tend to look at the bigger numbers and think like, oh, that'd be nice to win that or nice to finish high in there. I think that I slide a little bit too much towards GPPs kind of as the season goes. And I lose my discipline and cash game percentage a little bit in the season going on. So I'm going to try and fix that this year and kind of stick with it. And I think it's important to stick with your plan. You know, obviously you need to adjust as the season goes on how you're doing, you know, whether you drop down a little bit or go up a little bit if you're doing well. But I think sticking to a plan, you know, I see a lot of people like, I'm going to play more cash games. I'm not going to play much GPP. And like week 3, they're playing 90% GPP. And it's just one of those things that you have a couple bad weeks in football. It's tough because you have a couple bad weeks and suddenly, you know, Sunday night you see the results. You're like, oh man, this sucks. And you got Monday, Tuesday. You have a whole week to just like stare at those big GPPs and stare at those big numbers. And I think people, it's easy to get away from your plan midseason because you're excited for games. It's easy to talk about your plan preseason and, you know, you're trying to figure out stuff to talk about and trying to plan. But I think as you get in the season, it's really hard to stick with that. And I'm going to try and myself for sure, and I think everybody else should, you stick with your plan at least through the first 4 weeks of the season and then maybe readdress. You know, you get to 25% way in the season, then maybe sit down with your results and figure out maybe a new plan or a way to go. But stick with that plan the first 4 weeks and then reassess after that, I think is a pretty key thing for everybody, but definitely something that I'm going to try and do this year.
I think one of the toughest things about consecutive losing cash weeks, like if you're trying to just grind out cash games and you're losing, and that doesn't even necessarily mean that like you're getting off the cliff is a term that has become popular. Where you basically win nothing. The benefit about for head to heads is that usually you end up with some people who are worse than you. But so you're not going a total loss. But one of the toughest things about losing a few weeks in a row in cash games is that your mind immediately starts thinking, if I'm going to lose, why am I putting myself in a situation where if I do win, I'm doubling my money instead of making my $20 into a million? And right. I think that's really tough. And it's kind of one of the term like that it's a grind is fully accurate. And so there's going to be a time where you hit on this losing streak. And even if you're somebody who predominantly plays GPPs or really has no interest in cash games, like I totally understand doing that. Like you want to put the time in and get a significant reward in cash games, unless you're entering, $1,000 head to head. And obviously the downside's a little higher there if you lose, as opposed to entering the millimaker. But the idea in GPPs is generally like you're going to lose more often than you win, just because it takes a much higher score to cash, particularly in NFL, to like win a GPP, the lineup has to be nearly perfect. And so if you start thinking, you know, you start going week to week and you're not quite winning. And even if you're not cashing at all, at least you have that idea of like, if next week I can just do this again and I can win big. Whereas in cash games, it's like really tough to get out of that because a few weeks of losing, you have to like grind yourself back in. And I think what a lot of people, use cash games for is more on the downside, in that like you can still, if you get good at this, you're not going to lose everything. Whereas in GPPs, you could put in a ton of entries and literally lose everything. And then, you're so far behind at week, whatever, 4 or 5, that either you stop playing or you start getting, you don't adjust and you start getting a little riskier, even though, because you're thinking, well, this process isn't working, so let me just try something completely different. And then you just start putting yourself in significantly negative EV situations. And then now it's not fun. You're not winning any money and you're done playing.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about changing your process. I think that's important to make sure you look at your process and make sure it's right. But if you do like your process, if you feel good about what you're picking, like you said, don't shift off that. It's always important to improve your process, but changing your process, just change your process. It tends to get you in a lot of trouble.
And that's kind of what we had mentioned in a previous podcast of like, what's really important about looking at your results, both when you win and lose, is trying to figure out if the guys that did well in that week, if you did not do well, and you look at the guys who did well and you don't understand why people had those guys, then you need to go back to your process and say, where in my process did these guys fall out? Because if they did really well and a lot of people had them and I missed it, why did I miss it? And subsequently, if you won huge one week, you need to look in and say, did I get lucky or was my process right? And once you figure those out, then it's easier to figure out what you're going to do the following week.
And I think, listening to this podcast, hopefully you'll help with that. I think we'll do that a little bit, we'll look back a little bit and figure out what we did right, what we did wrong. I think it's important to do so. I got a question for you on GPPs. Do you have a strong preference on, I'm just going to use numbers, but say you have $100 to play in GPPs that week. Do you have a strong preference in doing like 4 $25 entries or one in the $100 contest? Do you have a strong feel on how to kind of split up your money in GPPs?
Yeah, the way that, because there are so many options on DraftKings, right, and FanDuel, like if I only had one entry, I probably am not entering it solely in a $100 GPP. Like if that's your GPP bankroll for the week, you want to spread it out just because, and that's more if you're making multiple lineups. Like if you're making one lineup and just throwing in a bunch of GPPs, like you have to appreciate that there's significant downside risk there, that if the lineup doesn't do well, you don't cash anywhere. So if you have this bankroll, it's better to make multiple lineups. And if you think of it, if you enter 10 lineups, 10 lineups into 10 different GPPs, you're giving yourself 10 opportunities to win. And obviously, if you're a one lineup person, you enter in all the GPPs and you crush it and you win everything, like obviously that's fantastic. It's also like highly unlikely. And it is important to understand that like different GPPs have different cash lines just because there are fewer people in it. So obviously the more people are in it, the higher you're probably going to have to score, because there's probably a lineup within the, tens of thousands of entries that will hit the perfect one. And so, I think it's better to just make sure that you're entering into a bunch of things. And one of the, lessons that, I learned back when I did soccer podcasts, kind of these teaching ones with Jordan Cooper, is, he always makes sure that the total amount of his entry fees is less than the amount that he could win in a GPP. So basically you don't want to enter so much that if one of your GPP lineups wins, you don't want that to then be less than how much you've entered.
Like, that's a good point. Yeah.
It's one of those things that like some people just don't think of that. And so you want to make sure, and with football, it's a little easier, especially with $100. To kind of spread around. Like if you win a GPP, they're big enough. Certainly the first prize is big enough where that'll pay it off. But just make sure that like, based on what you're entering, are you going to be rewarded enough for how much you're putting in? And so it's just one, part of the contest selection of just spread it around, because you want to give yourself the best chance to win a GPP. Like, don't go in thinking we're going to win 10. Obviously you want to win 10, but realistically, if you're going to do multiple lineups like that, the realistic hope is one of them hits. And if it does, then you're probably good for the whole season.
Do you have a strong feeling on, the big GPPs versus like a single entry GPP? Do you, I know you don't play as many as I do, but do you have do you enter the really big ones when you play, or are you more like a single entry trying to win, $6,000 rather than $100,000?
Yeah. I generally don't worry about single entry. Like I understand why people enter them, but I just kind of have this fundamental thought process that, like, if I'm going up against 30 people who each have 150 lineups, like, it doesn't matter to me if one of them wins or if we happen to be in a GPP where it's that many people doing unique or single entry ones. Like, I hate saying that because that I'm just looking for the big number, because we complain so much about these top heavy GPPs. And then I have to admit that, like, those top numbers are pretty, like, okay.
There's a reason those top numbers do well.
They're
certainly appealing, and it's hard to look at them and not jump in.
Yeah. I mean, coming from soccer, which is significantly smaller, the raw numbers themselves, it's easier to kind of make that jump. Whereas, you know, if you look at a soccer GPP, that's like, it's 2000 to first and $60 to eighth. And I'm like, well, that's not fun at all. But, like, eighth place in an NFL GPP is like $6,000. And so, like, that's a little different than $60.
Yeah, that's
even if you have to beat significantly more people.
Yeah.
And once again, a note from one of our sponsors. Are you tired of the same old fantasy football league that gets canceled after a year or so? If so, Dynasty Owner has your back. Go to DynastyOwner.com because new leagues for the 2021 season are forming now. Dynasty Owner unites the fun and excitement of fantasy football with the skill and strategy of the front office by incorporating a salary cap and real NFL player salaries for diehard fantasy football fans that want the real GM experience. Dynasty Owner adds a whole new level of strategy. Are you worried you won't be able to find anyone to play in your league with? Don't worry. Dynasty Owner can help you fill your league with fantasy football enthusiasts like yourself. You won't have to worry about finding enough players. You can choose to start a league, join an existing one, or purchase a team from a previous owner. If you're serious about joining the big leagues, go to dynastyowner.com/rotowire and start your dynasty today.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So some mistakes to avoid as we go through this long NFL season. We kind of hit on a little bit at the beginning, but I think it's really important not to change your plan. Don't change your plan because of a good week. Don't change your plan because of a bad week. It's okay to increase volume if it's a successful week, but you've got to stick with your plan. You got to stick with your process. And I think that's kind of the number one mistake that I see people make. And I talk to people on Twitter, or they send emails, to asking advice, that kind of stuff. I think the number one thing people do is they freak out after week one, and they either won a bunch and they're playing huge contests that they shouldn't be in, or they lose a bunch and they're like, I'm either going to chase my losses or I'm not going to play as much. I think sticking with your plan and really not freaking out after 2 weeks is really important.
I totally agree. And I think it's also important to recognize, specifically in terms of how you're playing, not so much just the volume of it, but like if you in week one hit a GPP and you have this big winning, you're like, this is awesome. And then you're like, wait a minute. So I'm really good at this. And now what I noticed is that a lot of the good players who also are in GPPs play a lot of cash games. And if like, I've never played cash games before, but like people who do this a lot play cash games, and I only do GPPs, but since I won this GPP, I have all this money. So now I'm going to play a bunch of cash games. And people who play cash games love that, because if you have no idea what you're doing and now you're coming in with a bunch of money for cash games, like, everybody's celebrating because you, or everybody who usually plays, because it's easy money for people. Because if you're somebody who's like, oh, I know these low owned guys and I'm really good at this, clearly, because I just won $100,000. And now I have to make this cash lineup, and you're just going to get destroyed. And so, like, I think if you're somebody who wants to focus on GPPs and you hit one big early in the season, keep playing them. Like, if that's what you do and that's what you're after, just because you won one doesn't mean you can't win another. It's unlikely, but there are certainly people who do it. And so I think it's not only in terms of just your bankroll, but like in terms of your contest selection, that it's better to stay disciplined, because while it's a little tougher, if you're somebody who plays $100 a week and you hit for $100,000, obviously your bankroll can go up if you want it to, but there's no reason to just go crazy just because you have all of this extra money.
Yeah, and I think on the flip side, it's important not to chase losses. And this has become a thing in DFS now. I used to call this the Hawaii problem back in the day when I used to bet some college football here and there. Allegedly, if you had a bad day, you always had that Hawaii game on the West Coast. Like, that game started at like 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So you've got all these games. You're really studying games and figuring out. But then all of a sudden you're down a certain amount. You're like, oh, there's one game left. Let me bet it just because it's there. And it happens so often. I have a lot of friends who used to do that. Now in the NFL, you've got the Sunday game. But in DFS, you have that showdown contest on Sundays or on Mondays. It used to be like, if you had a bad DFS week, you're like, you know what, this sucks and I got to figure out all week. But you had those like 3 or 4 days to kind of cool down and get back to your process. Now, if you have a bad Sunday, you're like, oh, crap, I can play a whole bunch of showdown teams on Sunday night or even Monday night. I think it's really important not to chase your losses and get caught into that. And now it's a thing you can do in DFS, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, they give you plenty of opportunities to make up for your losses. Although theoretically, it gives you some more volume if you just won and you want to keep winning. I think that's the idea, at least. But I think one of the big things with that is a lot of people will be like, oh, I lost today and I know there's a game tonight, so I'll just throw in a lineup. And like,
of course,
there's no research process to it. You're just getting lazy. It's theoretically easier because you don't have as many spots to fill in terms of the roster. It's one game, so you have fewer players you have to worry about. But like, there's a significant research process that goes into showdown. Like, it's easy. I say this about DFS a lot of times. Like, it's easy to play and it's really hard to win. And I think one of the things that people are like, oh, DFS is so easy to play. And it's like, it is really easy to play. Like, you can build a lineup in seconds, but like, winning is really tough. And so if you're putting yourself in a situation where you're like, I'm going to play this showdown slate because it's really easy to play, you have to realize that there are people who only play showdowns. Like, they have no interest in a Sunday 12 game slate. All they want to do is play showdown, and that they've been, the work that you do for your classic lineups, they've been doing for their showdown lineups. And there is a lot to building good GPP, I mean, even cash, but like specifically GPP lineups for showdowns, because there's more than just like, I need low owned guys. Like, you need a unique lineup so that if you do win, you win everything. Like, there's the last thing you want is to win 100,000 GBP and split it with 50,000 people. That's right. Obviously an extreme example, but
That's a $2 win right there. I took math.
So there's just a lot that goes into it. And if you're like rushing this because like you just got slaughtered on this regular classic slate, I have an hour until kickoff. Let me just try to make it up here. Like, realize that there's work that goes into these showdown lineups that you should be putting in, and just like trying to make up for Sunday, for earlier Sunday, by slapping something together is not going to work.
Yeah. And I think the key thing you said was make it up. Like, I'm not saying, if you're going to sit down and watch a Sunday night game with some friends, not to throw a $9 entry in for some fun. But I think that the phrase you used, make it up, was the key. Like, if you lost $200 on during the day on Sunday, don't try and make it up on Sunday night, Monday night, just because you're frustrated. And it's just the fact that those slates are there is just really dangerous. It is like a betting problem with trying to chase your losses. And that's been a thing for years. But I think the key word you said in there was make it up. And you got to not do that. You don't want to play. You want to have some fun. You want to try and make a few bucks, sure, but don't try and make it up on those showdowns.
Right. I mean, like I said, I'd like to play more showdowns this year. That's part of my plan is to play more showdown, and I'm not going in you should have an idea, before the classic slate, if you're going to play the showdown that night, and don't let what happens all day Sunday affect what you do for your Sunday night entries. They're not correlated events at all. Just because you lost or won on the earlier slate shouldn't have any effect on what you do at night. And so just remember that that's, they're different contests, and you need to be able to prepare yourself for those like it is anything else.
You talk about focusing on showdowns. Are you someone that's going to play the Sunday night game also, or are you kind of stay away from that because you're watching games on Sunday? Or are you more of a Monday, Thursday person? What's your plan with that?
I'll probably play all three. Yeah.
Okay.
Until I just decide they're awful. No, I'm just kidding.
What time did that game start on the East Coast for you? Is it 8:30 start on
8:30,
Sunday?
8:30, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that gets a little bit late.
Yeah, I mean, but you're somebody who doesn't scoreboard watch anyway, so shouldn't
I do not.
So the idea of I'm gonna put this lineup in and I'll watch the first quarter and then I'll go to sleep, isn't that the same thing?
Well, I like watching games. I just don't like watching the scoreboard.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll see the problem with showdown.
It's more fun to me to sit down and watch a game and look at the result at the end rather than it is to watch and see how many points that, Lamar Miller, I guess he's not a good example anymore. How many points that Marlon Mack, 6-yard run got for me.
Yeah. Okay. I understand that. I guess the big difference with showdown is, right away how you're doing because
yeah, that's true.
You can't make up touchdowns anywhere else. It's not like there's so many games going on that you see one of your guys scroll by, scored a touchdown. And you're oh, that's awesome. That probably helped me. Showdown, it becomes very clear that if one of your guys gets hurt, you're probably toast. And so I guess you're probably toast in classic also, but just one of those, if you're a low owned guy, all of a sudden scores a touchdown that nobody was expecting. And now you're maybe I should look at this.
It's a foreign concept to me. Do you actually have to go to bed before games end?
Yeah.
That's never happened to me before.
Oh, I haven't seen the end of a Monday Night Football game in 15 years, I bet.
If someone you care about is playing, will you stay up or is it just too late?
What do you mean care about?
I was going to say the Jets are playing, but
yeah, there's not a lot
of
Jets Monday Night Football. They played Thursday. Yeah, I stay up for the Thursday ones.
Like Rams Chiefs that you're staying.
I'm probably staying up for that. Yeah, I usually watch some of it, so I'll know if the game has a great first half. I'll probably stay up for it. But
gotcha.
I generally don't watch Monday night or Sunday or Thursday night. Sunday night, I can get some of it. Sunday's just tough, because not only just, and this is a totally personal, schedule problem that soccer, I watch because of my other job, I do a lot of European soccer and that starts at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so it's I have a family. And so explaining to my wife that I have to watch two soccer games and then a whole afternoon of football and then watch Sunday night. Where do you leave time for the Bachelorette?
That's a really good point. I like it.
Yeah.
Do you sit down, watch soccer on Sunday morning and tinker with your lineups? Yeah, it must be a little, it's a fun and full Sunday morning with both sports going on.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Sunday soccer is very limited. I really don't play a lot of Sunday mornings. The contests are small. Cash games are really small. So it's easy to skip it. Saturday is really the big day for soccer, at least for the Premier League. And so, yeah, but having it on and knowing following what's going on while you're building football lineups is pretty good.
So back to mistakes to avoid. You mentioned you want to talk about not creating correlations that don't exist. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah. So this popped into my head, not popped into my head, but it was while I was listening to a podcast, I think it was last week with Chris Liss and Jeff Erickson talking about their processes for Survivor and doing picking against the spread every week, where Jeff made this point of you don't want to make correlations between games because they're completely independent events. So if you are picking every game against the spread and you're oh man, I picked every away team, and you're that doesn't matter. Each event is its own situation. And like what happens in one game really does not affect what happens in another. I mean, if you're parlaying them, then like, again, what they're totally separate events. And so what you want to do that, or you want to stay away from making these correlations in your head of like, if this guy, I don't want to have every player from the early games, like, because I don't want to have, you know, I want to be able to have a few guys in the later slate. So I'm going to actually make a worse pick because this guy is kicking off at 4 o'clock Eastern instead of 1 o'clock. And it's like, that makes no sense. Like,
I know so many people that do that too.
And there will be people be like, well, there, you know, there's late swap and you want to be able to leave yourself some options. And it's like, that is true. But if you're actually going in making worse picks because it gives you some flexibility later on, the reason why you need that flexibility later on is because you're falling behind everybody who didn't care that they had everybody in the early games. And now they, you know, they got their scores and now you're working to catch up, even though you could have had those guys. Like, I realize that there is a strategy late swap. We did a whole podcast about it, but if really the situation is meant for similar guys, whereas if you think all of the best plays are in the early games, play those guys and don't. It's actually kind of an anti-correlation. You're making the correlation that like I need to spread it out, but just don't worry about game time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. A lot of people, I always hear like, oh, I have to have the late afternoon hammer to really catch up in lineups. And yeah,
late game
that's
hammer
great.
Is so great.
It's always. And that's great, except if you're actually taking someone that you think is going to score less points just because they play in the afternoon, like just think about that for a second. And I have people tell me that all the time. Well, I want to be able to catch up. I'm like, well, there's no point. If you're taking – if you could have had 33 points or someone earlier and you're taking someone you think is going to score 26 points, like that doesn't make any sense. Just think about it.
Right. Exactly. There, you don't get any extra points for playing in the later games. Like you're putting in a variable that doesn't exist for real life.
Yeah.
Like
when the Sunday night game used to be in the main slate, it's not anymore. The Sunday night hammer was always a thing. I just rolled my eyes. All
the only reason why that may have been a thing is because those Sunday night games tended to have good, like great teams. And so it was like, but if those great teams were playing in the first game, the slate of games, you would have taken them anyway.
Right.
So that's
fine. But I've had a lot of people like, you know, just wanted someone in the late game just for no other reason, just to have someone to catch up with. And it makes no sense. It doesn't work math wise. Doesn't work common sense wise. Just doesn't work at all. So make your best team, figure out your best stuff. Don't do it based on game time. And on that same note, don't overanalyze weather. I think we talked about it the very first podcast, but only extreme weather has big effects on games. And even extreme, like I'm looking for, you know, super snowy or windy is a big thing for me. If there's like huge wind gusts and you have a quarterback, I start to think about that at some point. If there's a ton of rain, you worry about the ball slipping and stuff. But for the most part, I kind of skip weather unless it's super, super extreme.
And the easiest way to know if it's going to affect anything is looking at the total. And if
Absolutely. The
total is not moving, then everybody who's betting on this game doesn't think it matters. And so you're now putting in this, it's effectively a narrative at that point. And you're thinking like, oh, the weather's really bad. And nobody thinks that the total is moving. I mean, maybe it was already low so that, you know, because they thought the weather was going to be bad. But like just look at the total versus every other game. I mean, it's kind of the process that you're using already. And you're saying like, if this game has the highest total and now it's still the highest total, like, that's the problem. There's your answer. I mean, obviously, if it's going down and now it's the fourth biggest total, now you're like, okay, maybe. But that's like built into the total. Don't say like, oh, it's falling and there's weather. Like, no, that's why the total is falling.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of very smart people that bet on games. A lot of smart people in the sports books that set the lines. If there's an issue. If there's something that's really going to affect it, you're going to see that total drop, and you'll see it drop by 3 or 4 points, and that does happen, and that's when you need to get your antenna up, maybe figure out you need to switch away to some other players.
Yep, exactly.
I think something that we talked about at some point during the season so far is, you know, I think it's a big mistake to kind of slam someone into your last roster spot just because of the amount of money you build. I see so many people that build, you know, they have their eight guys they really like in that ninth spot. They're like, well, I have 6,300, so I'm just going to slam someone who's 6,200 or 6,100. Like, make sure that you're taking someone you want to take them, not because they fit. You know, building a team is building the entire team, not building eight spots and just slamming someone in the last spot.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think people are generally more okay with it if they're like a minimum price tight end, because they're like, oh, if this guy's going to play, you know, if he can get me two catches, like that's fine. But like, that's about as punty as it gets, which sometimes
punty. I like it.
Sometimes that works. You know, if you're building one of these like stars and scrubs lineups, then like those occasionally work. But yeah, if you're in that range, if you're much higher than that, where there are guys who can like actually produce, look at the guys who are there. Like, don't say like, and don't assume that because a guy is more expensive than somebody else you're looking at, that he's better. Like, the ranges of salaries are there for a reason, but it's more just for the gameplay itself, not necessarily that they think one guy is going to score more points than the other. And so, you know, just like you said, have a reason for every player.
Yeah, and it's easy to talk yourself into guys. You know, you can get to that spot where you have $7,400. Like, you're like, oh, well, maybe I really do like Brandon Cooks at $7,300. And you just, you know, make sure you don't do that either. I think it's a, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I would never do that. And then you look at, you build your lineups, you're like, oh, maybe I do that. And I think I am someone that I've done that in the past, and I've tried to get away from it, you know, building the entire team rather than, you know, like I said, eight guys in one spot. But it's easy to talk yourself into someone just because they kind of are the perfect salary fit. You got to be careful not to do that.
And I think one of the benefits to having team defenses is because they're so variable. I don't want to say it doesn't matter which one you take, because obviously they matter, but the variance is so high that if you are like, oh, I have 73 left and the guy really wants 7,500, like, change your defense. Like, it's probably not going to burn you. You're probably going to get 4 points instead of five. Like, obviously there are situations where you're like, oh, I had this defense and then I had to change and they scored 25 points because they had two interception returns for touchdowns. But like, it's probably not going to be that drastic. If it happens to you, you're going to remember it forever though, just to warn you. But, but like, that's the easy way to do it. So like, it's almost like the defense should be your last spot that you fill, just because you don't necessarily want your team defense to decide where you're going with your other spots, because the scoring is just so random that you may be able to pay down a little more and it actually benefits you because they score more points than the one that you paid up for. And so like, use the defense for its flexibility more than like the defense itself.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean take any defense, but you know, if you have to go down $200, like, pick a defense that you can kind of, you see the game script, you see the game flow, you can think can start to work. And you know, it's funny, you mentioned you'll remember that defense that, you know, goes off that you switched away from, but there are so many times you're like, oh, I got to play Jacksonville this week. They're playing, you know, used to be Cleveland, you know, and this is perfect, and you look up and they have 5 points. So yeah, that happened so much and so much where you just don't remember it, but there are so many times where I'm like locked into a defense and this is the play this week and they score 4 points. You're like, why did I spend so much time, you know, working around that defense? So I think I agree. I'm gonna do a little bit more of that this year and kind of be a little more flexible with my defense and, you know, find someone I like and find someone in a good matchup. But, you know, if I need a couple $100, that's where I'm going to look to swap to.
There was definitely a week last season where we were discussing it in our subscriber Discord, which has actually been pretty active despite no games going on yet. But if anybody wants to join
for two seconds. Yeah. Explain that exactly what that is.
Yeah. So, this is a chat that we have for all RotoWire subscribers. You just go to rotowire.com/chat and it takes you right there. And there are people who are literally chatting about football all the time in terms of, you know, what salary ranges people are looking for. We see a lot of 1v1 questions for cash or GPPs. And so it's a pretty good community. Even on Sundays, people are just kind of in there tilting. You obviously would have no interest in this as somebody who doesn't even check scores. But there was definitely a week last season where there were multiple people like, no, this, you have to pay up for the Bears this week. I forget who they were playing. I mean, the Bears are usually pretty good, but whatever their garbage opponent was that week, it was like, no, you got to play the Bears this week. And the Bears had like 6 points. And like, I think it was the Bucks had like 25. And everyone's like, well, who saw that coming? And it's like, well, that's the point. Right. Like, we don't know with defense. Like, the Bears could have an excellent defensive game and force 12 punts. And you're not getting that many points for that. And so I think one of the important things specifically on DraftKings, because it skews a little more that way, like, points allowed really shouldn't be a concern to you. Like, there's like a 4-point difference between giving up 3 points and giving up 33 points. And so, meaning 3 fantasy points. And so you want turnovers, sacks, like you want the action points, basically. And so that's why these things can be so variable and why it's okay to like pay down $200 if you have 7,300 left and you actually want a guy who's 7,500, like, it's okay to go there.
Yeah, and there's a fine line of defenses too. Like in the third and fourth quarter, if your defense is up 14, that's great because that other team's, you know, really throwing to try and catch up. But if your team's up 28, you know, sometimes that team on their side in the fourth quarter just running the ball and trying to get the heck out of there.
Yes. Too. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want 45-3. You want like 17-7, like in the fourth quarter. That's you want a team trying to catch up, not a team trying to get on the bus.
17-7 in the fourth quarter sounds like a classic Jets game.
That does something like not this year. We're gonna have a little Sam Darnold. I love Jameson Crowder, Robbie Anderson. I think the Jets are gonna be a little explosive this year.
I can guarantee you, we will have a Jets conversation next week.
I look forward to it. I think Robbie Anderson is a nice, great season long play at the price, and I think he's gonna be a nice DFS guy too.
Okay, we'll get
and
there.
Jameson Crowder on DraftKings with a catch per PPR full point PPR. I can talk. I think he's gonna be kind of sneaky too. I think they're really setting him up. I think he might be an 80-90 catch guy this year.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah. See, look at that. I'm talking up your Jets. another thing, you know, that I think people make mistakes on, you know, I'm kind of taking this from, I've played this for a lot of years. I talk to a lot of people who play different levels of DFS. I'm obviously very involved in the season long community too, so I talk to a lot of people there. But I think that the problem some people get to is, you know, don't play low percentage guys just because you're trying to be contrarian. Play low percentage guys because you like them. You have a reason for playing them. You have a reason for what you do. I think we hit this maybe on the first podcast, but I talk to people all the time like, well, I'm going to play this guy because nobody's going to play him. I'm like, well, why? He's not going to do anything. But he's low percentage. No one's going to own him. Well, that's great if he catches a touchdown, but you can find low percentage. There's so many games on the slate. You can find low percentage guys. You could be contrarian while having a reason for playing a guy. I think it's really important to only play guys you have a reason to. I know I preach that probably too many times on podcasts, but you can get, there are so many plays. There's so many wide receivers, especially if you're playing a low percentage guy to wide receiver, do it because there's a damn well good reason you're doing it. You think he might actually do something.
Yeah. The, because he's low owned should be the second part of your reason. Like,
yes,
you should say like, I'm playing this guy because I think, you know, he's been getting more targets in game, you know, the air yards look good and he's, coach is talking him up. They moved him the first line or the top line for in practice. And I think he's going to be low owned. And like, that's where you go with the low owned. Like, obviously for GPPs, you want low owned guys, but there are a lot of guys who are low owned because they are awful. And you don't want to be these people who
exactly.
are rostering them because like, this guy is so cheap. And nobody has him. And it's like, well, he's that cheap because he is terrible and nobody has him because he's right. terrible, except now you have him and now your lineup is terrible.
And you always get after week one or week two, you're like, oh my God, this guy won the millionaire with a 0.4% player. I promise you that person took that person for a reason. And if they didn't, they just got really lucky. And that happens too. But for the most part, good players, you see the low percentage plays, they took them because there's a reason. They saw something there that made them switch to that player.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
By the way, moving to the top line in practice sounds like the most soccer thing you've ever said.
Which is funny. It's more like a hockey term.
I started fumbling it.
I've been doing a little hockey stuff recently, so my head's all over the place.
We call that first string in the United States.
They definitely don't even call it top line in soccer. I don't know where that phrase came from.
It felt very soccerish. I just
So, what do your fraternity brother Steve, Katie from work, and your grandma all have in common? They're all waiting for that invite to your fantasy football league. There's no better way to hang out, no easier way to smack talk, and no more customizable platform to host your fantasy leagues this year than Sleeper. Whether you have a redraft league or a dynasty league that's been around for 10 years, Sleeper has everything you need in one app. Incredible commissioner tools and customizations, built-in messaging, support for snake drafts, auction drafts, and best ball leagues, blazing fast news, stats, and scores, all in a beautifully designed mobile app and website that makes every other app feel like a horse and buggy. Sleeper is the fastest growing fantasy sports platform for a reason, and all the cool commissioners are switching to Sleeper and not looking back. Don't just take my word for it. Download Sleeper on iOS or Android and see for yourself. You have nothing to lose. It's free.
So, Andrew, RotoWire has a lineup optimizer. A lot of sites have lineup optimizers. I'm going to let you talk first on this one because I think you're a little better with this. You work with the one in RotoWire. You know how it works a little better. I tend to be a build-my-own-lineup person. I'm kind of old school, and I'm old, and I'm a little stubborn at times. I don't have a ton of experience using them. I have used them. I've used them for basketball. I use them for baseball a bunch. It kind of gives you a little bit of a good start on lineups. But talk to me how you use the lineup optimizer, especially the one in RotoWire, which is, you know, very valuable.
Are you using pen and paper?
I do use a lot of pen and paper.
It's really old school.
It really is. I told you, I'm stubborn is something that you would use to describe me. My wife would agree.
I had to fill out a form for my kid's school yesterday, and my hand hurt because I had to write like five words. So there.
You're just trying to point out how much young you are. That's fine. I understood.
Am I even
point
younger?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
Okay. So there are definitely ways to use an optimizer the way it was meant to be used, and there's a way to lazily use it and get poor results. And so the latter part of that is going to an optimizer, whether it's the RotoWire one or somewhere else, and there's usually a giant button that says, like, generate the optimal lineup. And right. Basically what that does is it takes that site's projections for the games, looks at their salaries, and gives you essentially the most amount of points that you can score within the salary structure. And one of the important things to understand is that projections pretty much anywhere are generally just 50th percentile projections. They don't account for if a guy has his ceiling game or what his floor is. I mean, it gives you kind of like, if you do this 100 times, like, this is the most likely thing that will happen. And yep. While that's fine.
That's a really good point, by the way.
Yeah. And so while that could be fine for what you're looking for, you have to understand that if our optimizer says this running back is going to score 24 points and this other one is going to score 23.5 and they have the same salary, it's never going to give you the guy who scores 23.5 because
right.
It's fundamentally built to give you the guys who provide the most value for their salary. And you have to realize that the odds that the chances of these two guys being similar, or obviously the projections think they're going to be similar, but there's probably just as much of a chance of the 23.5 guy outscoring the 24 than vice versa. And so right. When you use the optimizer, you're pretty much just throwing out a bunch of guys who are within a certain number of points to the guys that end up in the optimizer because it's in they should be in the range, but you're now ignoring them and playing this lineup that may not cash at that point. And so the way I use the optimizer, and it generally helps more to give you an idea if you're making multiple lineups, but what you effectively want to do, and I know it sounds weird, is you want to throw out everybody. Like, there are certain games where you're like, I probably don't want any exposure to this game. And so within these optimizers, within our optimizer, like, you can just exclude a game. So if you're trying to hone in on a cash lineup and you're looking at the Ravens, Dolphins, although Ravens probably bad. If you're looking at Jets Bills, that has a total of 39.5 and you're like, I don't want anybody from this game. Like, you can exclude them. And now it's never going to give you Le'Veon Bell, never going to give you Sam Darnold. And you're going to regret that because they're going to kill the Bills. But anyway, so
I love it.
What you want to do is use the optimizer to basically reduce the player pool to the guys that you actually want to consider. And once you do that, you're going to realize that this giant pool of players, which, I mean, 12 games, a lot of players that you have to get through. But using the optimizer will make you realize that there are a lot of guys that you just don't want. So, like, take out all the guys from the Dolphins. And, like, even if you're thinking, like, you know, the Dolphins are at home, but, like, you're not going to play any Dolphins in a cash lineup. Like, it's, I get it, but, like, it really makes you look at each player and really each game and just say, like, do I want any exposure to this game? And if the answer is no, then you're reducing your player pool. And effectively, once you do this over and over again, now you start getting into the, well, do I want these two guys or these two guys? Instead of, like, do I want these eight guys versus these eight guys? And so the way that you can use the optimizer, like, don't even worry about the fantasy points that are projected to start. Like, what you want to do is reduce your player pool. And then once you get that, then you can start looking at where, you know, if you want to use the projections, that's fine. But you can see, like, all right, this guy's projected for 20.5 and this one's for 21. And you just have to recognize that they're basically the same, like, keep them the same. And you can adjust the fantasy point projections, like, manually in the optimizer. So you could put in the same projection for, you know, let's say you go in, I don't know if I want Dak Prescott or Carson Wentz or Russell Wilson. And so, like, you can just go in and say, project all of these guys for the same. And then you can go in and run the optimizer and it'll give you a lineup of, if it could be any of these quarterbacks, here are the running backs and wide receivers that fit with these guys. And that's how you sort of start using the optimizer to help you build a lineup that you like, as opposed to the kind of one click and just hoping that the guy who was projected for 24 does actually outscore the guy that is there for 23 and a half.
I'd like to bottle up that 4 minutes and sell it.
That was really good. It's on rotowire.com/daily.
That was really good.
We do have a video on the optimizer page that can walk you through it. But I think generally optimizers, and it's probably just a poor term, like they're really like lineup builders.
Yeah.
But the way you want to use it is to help you build your lineup. You shouldn't be using these things to like get a lineup. That's not really the point of them. Plenty of people use them that way, but you're now relying on the projections of a site that is using 50th percentile projections when more often than not, these guys are not going to finish there, at least in a single NFL week. And so you have to understand that there's kind of a margin of error for all of these, and it can be pretty great. And guys who are projected for 25 points and guys who are projected for 24 points are effectively have the same projection. And so you need to use the optimizer to show that, like, if these guys are equal, who do I actually want to take?
I got a couple questions and then a few comments. Is that cool?
Yeah, of course.
I've used it before, so I know the answer to this, but I assume you can eliminate players as well as teams. So like you mentioned eliminating the Dolphins or the Bills or the Jets, you can eliminate, if you just don't want Le'Veon Bell, you could just do it that way too, right?
You can. I don't know why you would ever not want Le'Veon Bell, but yes, you could do that.
It was a terrible example. Yeah, I didn't mean it that way either. Yeah. It just came out anti-Jets. That was just mean to be mean. That was terrible.
That's all right. I know where you're lying. You're already talking about them for next week. It's great.
Another question. So with the lineup optimizer, like say you drop it in there, it gives you that one lineup. Do you find that lineup is like is high percentage in contests? There's obviously a lot of RotoWire subscribers, a lot of subscribers to other sites. Do you see like lineups that are high percentage because they're the optimizer lineup at the site? It would seem to me that using the exact lineup and optimizer would be just a sure way to make sure you do not have a unique lineup and just a bad idea.
It's certainly not ideal for Showdown where you're like specifically looking for unique lineups, but the football contests are big enough where you probably won't see a ton of duplication. I mean, as much as like we don't, as people kind of like look down on it, there are plenty of people who sell lineups, even though it's not really allowed by the sites, but like there are plenty of people who like buy a lineup. And so you could be in a double up and you look up and all of a sudden there's 50 entries that have the exact same lineup. And like theoretically,
it seems like such a bad idea though.
It's a really bad idea.
Yeah,
I've gone down that rabbit hole with a few people just explaining to me like why people do it. And I understand why people do it. I just think I don't even want to call it lazy, but it's just not a great way to play. Like you're not really doing any work.
A not fun way to play.
I mean, fun is in the eye of the beholder, isn't that?
I don't know. Clicking a button, getting a lineup, and entering all your contests seems like the least fun way to play defense.
There are people who do it. I mean,
I know there are, and
there are people who go to our lineup optimizer and they do it. But I think you know it's just one of those things where the lineup optimizer has a lot of tools in it that you can use. I mean, you can build stacks in them. You can change the projections to just look at guys who. Ceilings or floors, you can do it just, there's a lot of things you can do with it and, you want to be able to use them, like take advantage of this tool. And even if you're not necessarily running the optimizer to get one specific lineup, it's at least a different view of the entire player pool, but you have a little more information than you do just on the FanDuel or DraftKings lineup page where you can see the spread, you can see what the total is. It's easy to like eliminate guys from consideration. You can group certain guys together to compare them. And so there are tools within this optimizer on RotoWire that you should be using. If you're a subscriber that are just so much more effective than just give me an optimal lineup.
Yeah. And that was kind of you kind of bled into the comment that I was going to make at the end is I think that what's good about it is all the tools are there. It's a great way to kind of flip around and build your lineup. I think like you said, the calling out lineup builder would be, the way I would use it. But I think more than anything, it gives you all the players on one page, it gives you all the content on one page. And not only that, you can look at Zeke, say you're looking at running backs, you have them all on one screen. You can click on Zeke and go see what his game log looks like and go see what the opponent game log looks like. There's just so many things you can do from that one screen. And the value of it to me really is kind of a home page. You kind of click around, use it for different tools, use it for stacking, but also to jump around and jump around the site and read about different players. Whereas you get it all in one page, you got three running backs you like in the same range, click on all three of them, see what their game logs look like, see what their injuries are. You can get all the information from one page. You can use that as a really valuable tool that way.
Right. And one of the benefits of the optimizer is, you know, you can lock in certain, you know, if you have guys that you know you want, you can lock them in, and then you can run the optimizer, and it's like, well, here are some wide receivers that fit in this salary range. And even if you haven't eliminated guys, if you're looking and you're like, gosh, I don't like any of these guys, you can eliminate them, and then you can run the optimizer again. It's going to give you three more options and say, like, do you want these guys? And that's, you know, just continuing down the path of like reducing the player pool to one that you actually will consider. I mean, there are just so many players, and most of them you don't want. And so this at least gives you the idea of like, do you want to play this guy? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, then you can eliminate him. And now your player pool is even smaller so that you can get to the guys that you actually want to play.
Yeah, it's amazing how many great tools there are. I mean, just in the last like 5 or 6 years, so much stuff has come out that really makes this a lot more fun. It makes it easier in some way, makes it tougher in some ways. But I think the key, and more than anything, is with the optimizer, is you want to do your homework too. You know, don't let the optimizer do it for you. You want to pick your lineup. Use the optimizer to help build your lineup, to help give you some information, to help give you some keys, and, you know, like you said, guys you want to eliminate. But I think, you know, you doing your homework and using the tools as a combo is the way that you're really going to do well. You know, don't let this do all your homework for you. If you don't do it yourself, you're not going to get out of it what you put in.
Right. This is just a tool to help you get to the answer. This is not going to just give you the answer.
I know, but I like just getting answers, though.
It's certainly easier.
That's like why I said, you listen to the podcast every Friday morning. It's for answers, right?
That's right. Sorry, I forgot. I didn't realize you were setting me up for that one.
I was trying to.
Still working on it.
You just didn't take the bait.
Yeah, no.
Anything else on the lineup optimizer, the RotoWire site in general for DFS that you want to hit before we move on to some late game shenanigans here?
I mean, we're obviously going to have plenty of content throughout the season. Each week throughout the season, I think even if you only play on FanDuel, I think it's beneficial to read the DraftKings article just to give you another perspective. Maybe somebody has a little nugget that you didn't necessarily think of. And so, like, you know, there's going to be a lot of content out there. Take advantage of it and use the tools to their max.
Yeah, and we will be with you every Friday morning talking about the entire slate. I think Andrew and I have decided we're going to do kind of a by position, breaking it down. We're going to look at quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, tight ends, and defense. We'll kind of break it down that way. But we're going to get pretty in depth with everybody. We're talking about a lot of players, a lot of prices. We'll hit prices on DraftKings, FanDuel, and Yahoo. So I think we're gonna have a pretty good breakdown every Friday. So it'd be a good spot to come to after you've kind of done your initial research. You've looked at the games, looked at the slate. We're going to really get deep into the slate every week.
It's going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. It's been actually educational and fun to do these preseason ones. I thought at the beginning, I thought it was going to be, there's gonna be a lot of them to fill time, but it turned out that we had a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of good stuff. I learned a lot from you, and hopefully I imparted a little bit of wisdom too, but you know, talking about a lot of game strategy and content selection with you is going to be valuable for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think people kind of don't appreciate just how much more goes in to daily fantasy football than like knowing the players and like, I'll just take these guys. And there's a lot more to it.
And there's a lot of people that are playing it that intensely and that seriously that are using all the information too. Exactly. There's a lot of really good, serious DFS players out there. Whenever I read DFS stuff or hear some stuff, I'm always impressed by how much time people put into, you know, just one slate.
Totally agree.
And that's all we have for this week's episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by WinBet. We'll be back next week with some more great DFS discussions.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.